You're constantly judged on your appearance, really. You know, you either have to be at the top of your game or you have no chance of a professional career.
So when you were 27, that was probably the worst time of your life. So welcome back to the podcast. I've tried to get this guest on for quite some time and finally she is here. She's a property investor of the year, a TV presenter and much, much more than that. So I can guarantee you're going to get a lot of value from this podcast. Elizabeth Warburton, she's joined the show. So Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you very much. And I'm sorry, I know I've been so bad cancelling, rearranging. So
no, you're
sorry.
Very busy. You're a very, very, very busy person. So like I do on all of the podcasts, I like to take it right back to the beginning. Mm. What was it like for you growing up as a kid?
So I grew up in Liverpool. Yeah. Very normal family, semi-detached house. I have a brother and a sister. Normal school. But I was dancing every night after school. Mm-hmm. So that was like my previous career. So from two, I started ballet. Mm-hmm. And so it was quite intense when I look back. It was straight from school to dancing, kind of 4 till 9 o'clock most evenings, and a Saturday till 2 o'clock as well. Some weekends I'd be traveling all around the country to perform in competitions. So... yeah, it was a lot.
I'm going to use a quote that I heard from yourself.
Oh, yeah.
I came from a lack of financial security.
Mm.
What does that mean?
Massive lack of financial security. I didn't realise how much my parents grafted, essentially, to have what I had. Mm. I never knew that we were going without in other areas, but they very much were. Money has always been quite a hard topic for me and something that I'm still working on to this day to try and raise the ceiling of what I feel money is.
Yeah.
That's kind of the main thing is I had no idea what was going on.
What was going on?
My dad was working every hour under the sun. My mum gave up work when she had me because she was in her 40s. And because of the demand of like school and performing and all the rest of it, she was kind of a full-time dance mum. And she did work and do like bits and bobs, but it was very much just like the local shop at the end of the road type of work. She also used to do a lot of charity work and like volunteer and stuff as well. And... you know, without going too much into it, because they wouldn't want me to. There was a lot going on within their relationship that, you know, wasn't particularly nice.
Mm. And what was your relationship like with your parents?
Good. I have a really good relationship with both. They are separated. I see a lot of things in my mum that I am. And I see a lot of things in my dad that I am too. They're polar opposites. Mm. So I hope I've kind of taken the good from both.
Because, again, I've listened to another podcast that you've done.
Yeah.
They were working, well, you were doing the boot sales as well. Car boot sales.
Car boot sales, yeah. My mum still does them now. She loves them. we used to do them of like a Sunday morning. My mum, we'd sell all sorts. That was kind of the first... job, I guess, that I had. Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Even if you've got money, I think it's good to teach the younger generation that even now, when you can make so much money online, that you can be smart with the way that you earn money, but to actually graft, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just a different way of working.
Absolutely, yeah, totally different. I mean, my friend did the Battersea car boot a couple of weeks ago. So I didn't even know there was one there. And she made 800 quid on a Sunday morning. Not bad, is it?
Well, I don't think it is. So, yeah. Well, you can then put that to use in other areas, can't you?
Exactly, yeah. Selling all your old clothes and shoes and bits and bobs that are just lying around. Why not?
So you've you skimmed over your sort of dance era. Mm. I know that wasn't the easiest part of your life growing up, was it?
No, it was a lot. There was a lot of things going on within the dance world. I think that kind of leaks into the fitness world a little bit as well. Mm. There's lots of eating disorders around you. There's lots of body dysmorphia. you're constantly judged on your appearance, really, as well as your performance. It's getting better now, definitely. But yeah, back then it was high pressure. And I think from a young age, whether that's a good thing or not, I don't know now. And I don't know whether I would put my kids into dancing for that reason. Maybe I would let them decide, because there's good and bad in everything. But yeah, there's a lot of pressure involved in any type of sport for a child.
What type of pressure did you come under at that period of time in your life?
It was the pressure to always be the best, because it's such a cutthroat industry. You know, you either have to be at the top of your game or you have no chance of a professional career. So, you know, it's constant practice again, not good enough again. So that grates on you. You have to become really mentally resilient and strong. So there's definite times where you crumble, but you have to kind of pick yourself back up and crack back on. Some people don't make it. They switch and move because, you know, understandably, it's not for them. So you have to be pretty mentally strong in order to get through it all.
Were you trying to prove yourself to anyone?
I think at a young age, no, because I don't think you have the capacity to understand if you are doing that.
Yeah.
I think maybe there's something of like wanting to be accepted by the other people around you, and so your other like dancing friends, of like wanting to fit in with the best crowd.
Yeah.
The same as kind of like high school and wanting to be in the cool crowd and that type of peer pressure.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, as I got older, I was competitive. I did want to be the best, but I never was. But I think you always have to kind of strive to at least try. Otherwise, there's no hope in getting anywhere professionally.
I agree. I completely agree with you. I mean, I can resonate with that through my football, rugby, whatever sporting industry, whatever I do, I have to not necessarily be the best, but I teach my kids this. If you give 100%, then I'm okay with that. But if I will know if you haven't. But really, the only person that will know is you.
Is you.
And you're going to let yourself down.
Yeah.
And that's all I tell them. And only, again, when I go to the gym, whatever it might be, let's say for coming today to do the podcast, I knew that I could have cancelled, but I knew that I could make it.
Yeah.
So it's just pushing yourself to do a little bit more, or just that little bit more, that 1% extra every single day, but knowing your limits at the same time. And rather than pleasing everyone else, just know your limits and for you, enough is for you, whatever is enough for you.
Mm-hmm.
What about your school years? How was that for you?
School, I was very academic. So school actually wasn't too bad at all. I had a good set of friends. I was probably in the wrong crowd, but I was very headstrong, so I wasn't kind of easily led.
What do you mean by wrong crowd?
People doing dodgy things.
Like
so like the boys were all into drugs and the girls were all out partying when they shouldn't have been. We were like 14, 15 going out, drinking.
There's no judgment.
No.
I was.
Yeah, so. I think it's normal for most kids to be going and sneaking off doing things, right? And if you're a parent and think your child's not, you're probably quite naive. Either that or you've made them very good liars.
Yeah.
But no, on the whole, school was good. I like school. I got on with my teachers.
Yeah.
I was a bit of a goody two shoes, never had a detention in my life. And then, yeah, out of school, I think I knew I had to because of the outside dancing. If one started to fall or the other. My parents were quite strict, and I remember my dad always saying, you know, you need to get your education first, then you can go and perform, then you have our permission then to go and do the career that you want to do, but you've got to get your education as a backup. So that was just always in my mind.
Seems like you had a very good foundation, regardless of what was going on within your family home, and what you briefly touched upon earlier. There was always, from what you've just said there, quite a strong foundation.
There was.
Which you've relied on.
Yeah, my parents were really good at routine, and yes. I think that's so important.
Absolutely.
I was up at the same time every morning. I was, you know, in the shower, ready, breakfast, out the door, and then the same coming home. So I have my mum and dad to thank for that a lot, especially my mum, because she was, you know, around all the time, and my dad was busy working. But I think that's so important. Mm. And I try and still have that now because I travel a lot for work. I don't have a set 9-to-5 job at all. Mm-hmm. So just to try and keep some form of morning routine for me is important just mentally.
Yeah. And touching on that routine, and obviously the mental side of or implications of striving to be the best, have you ever dealt with rejection or mental health implications? Well, what are your thoughts on that?
100% I have, yeah. So coming out of drama school, you go to audition after audition after audition, and you get, you must go to about 20 castings before you get one job. So it's constantly no, no, no. Whether that's you're too tall, you're not the right hair colour, your dancing wasn't strong enough, your singing wasn't strong enough on that day. You know, you might have a cold, wake up, feel like crap, but you've got to go and do a 2-hour dance audition. So, which could then determine whether you've got a job for the next 12 months or not. So it's very high pressure.
Cutthroat.
Very, very cutthroat. I think people don't realise the world of dance either. I think they see it as just like floating around a bit, having a bit of a, you know... what's the word really, just having a bit of a laugh and a joke. It's a serious career, and I've got friends that are still performing now. I've got a very good friend who's a property investor in Blackpool, and she's in the West End still, and she's early 30s like me, and she's still going, and I have so much admiration for her because I know how hard it is to keep going. There has been times when my mental health has really struggled, but I think it's normal as well. I think understanding that these things are going to happen is quite important. We're all human. We're all going to go through ups and downs and have a roller coaster throughout life. And it's just being able to have the tools and the communication, I guess, to be able to move forward and move through it.
I think what you just said there, as long as you've got someone that, for example, your friend there, who you can speak to, and you've got the tools and you can implement them over a period of time, and you know that, yes, you're eventually going to be able to come through. It may take you 6 months, 12 months, whatever the case may be. You will come through it at the end. What were some of the tools that you've implemented over time to come through the other side?
Well, I got therapy once, which was amazing. It was CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy, and that's just a really good way to just shift your mindset and kind of break the cycle of what is going on. I also listen to a lot of podcasts. I talk about it now with friends, with family. I feel like my communication is so much better. If you just get out what you're feeling, that's the first big step. And I think that's actually the hardest thing for most people. People are scared to talk. I'm not. And it helps.
Do you think that's because of the likes of social media?
In what sense?
Because there's this stigma around if you talk, then there's this... I look at it as there's a different life that you should be living on social media, the Lamborghini lifestyle. But if you talk, about how you really feel, this, give off this other persona, then like, we are now having an honest conversation. When really you wouldn't normally talk about that every day on Instagram, let's say. Because if you did, they'd be like, "Hold on a minute, that's not who you normally are."
Yeah. So this is a really hard one, and I'll tell you why I think it is a really hard one, because I use Instagram mainly for business, and in the internet and you and who you are as a person in real life are two very different things. People can portray themselves on social media as one thing, or they can portray themselves on social media as another. But I I find it hard to air everything on social media because I don't want to.
I agree.
I don't want to post my personal life on there necessarily. I don't want to post, well, I don't have the time to post everything that goes on in life anyway. And why should we? So I think that's why Instagram and social media can be hard, because it is only probably 5% of what goes on in people's lives. So you're comparing your 100% to somebody's 5%. So I do post things that are negative and struggles and the odd frustration. I've spoken very openly about a property deal that was a nightmare, my first ever one, and I think most people's always are. Yep. But I also I don't want to dwell on the negative in my life. Otherwise, that makes my mindset go downhill. So I'll touch on things, but I'm not a big oversharer.
No, I agree. And I think you can build your self-esteem up by learning from the failures that you've been on in, or you've had in your life. Whether you post about them or not, it's completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
Some people like to post more.
Yeah.
And how they post is, I find, quite interesting. I choose to post other people's, and some other people choose to post about themselves. And it could be done in a completely different way and magnified. Would I do it? No, because that's not me. I don't do that. I choose to share your story, for example.
Yeah.
But I think you can build your self-esteem up by posting and learning about your failures. I don't know what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really nice way of putting it, to be honest. Learning from your failures is a massive one. I think it also depends massively on your personality type as well. Like, if you're more of an introvert, you're not going to be sharing all this on social media and Instagram. If you're a very private person. Or those other people that are making it their mission to give back and to give value to other people. So in order for them to do that, they have to be vulnerable, open up and share their experiences of failure and things that go wrong. So it's totally case by case.
And do you feel that people are ill-equipped, or I suppose it is right, to listen if you've gone through something because of, for example, say social media? Because there's so much noise that's going on, rather than just saying that they'll try and fix your problem, when all you really need is someone to listen to.
Yeah, I think there can be sometimes too much going on out there. Absolutely, you maybe just need to hone in and tune into yourself. Maybe even come off social media for a little while. I've had quite a few times where I've had a little reset and I've done a couple of months off, and I'm very often torn. I'd love to delete everything and just live a quiet, private life. But the amount of business and how I've implemented social media into work, I can't really. Maybe in a couple more years I could. But right now it gives me too much value, and I choose to see the positive as much as possible. And when I feel my brain starting to go down the negative route, I'll take a little reset and have a little break.
And I think that's very important for anyone that's listening. If you need to take a break, then you can take a break.
Yeah.
Or like you, when you went to therapy, it's okay to go to therapy.
Yeah.
100%. I think every guest that I've had on has had some form of therapy. So maybe not all of them, but it's okay to go. We obviously touched on the social media. Let's talk about your property.
Yeah.
Journey. So you said that it's probably been one of the worst times in your life.
It was awful.
What happened?
Well, I started off just investing in flips. So I had a husband and wife friend of mine who I was an angel investor for, essentially. So we did 4 or 5 of them together.
Is this when you were traveling?
This was when I was traveling, yeah. So I was still working away, mainly around Asia. And they were doing their flips and everything was going really well. And then it was about a year before COVID. I was like, okay, maybe I could start to look into this a little bit more. Because if I'm making a nice 10% return, not doing anything, what can you make if you're more involved? So I looked for a mentor, started like a course the month before lockdown. So everything turned to Zoom. And to be honest, that saved me during COVID because it had had a focus every week. It was like being back at school.
Yeah.
Three failed. I had three things fall out of bed before I actually managed to get the first deal. And then within that first week, three in one came about. So I ended up with three projects on. And it was like, whoa, okay. And I was still driving up and down from Liverpool because it was in Liverpool, wasn't really supposed to during COVID. So dealing with...
So I borrowed on it, that one.
Yeah, whatever. and it was a flip. It was a old rundown house and it should have been fairly straightforward, but just with my lack of inexperience, I took on this on a 50-50 split with a estate agent up in Liverpool who said he'd project manage things before. We probably didn't get our roles right from the beginning. He thought he was doing something. I thought he was doing something else. He wasn't managing the builders, which I thought he was because I was in London. The builders just weren't turning up. They were delaying things all the time. Mm. They weren't doing things properly. Certificates weren't being... like building control hadn't been signed off. We under budgeted. It was just everything went wrong that could have possibly gone wrong. It ended up being a brilliant outcome still. I didn't make anywhere near as much money as the plan was. Liz Truss had then announced her whole mess, and that was the week that I was completing. And the pound plummeted and I'd took a loan out on this, but it was a European investor. So I had to pay back in euros. So I lost about $6,000 in conversion that week because the pound tanked so much. I also had two or three people, can't remember now, pull out of the sale. So the loan went 2 months past. So I had to pay interest on it. So it was just like, it was a nightmare. But I look back now and like laugh and I can cope with all of that because there's no way I could ever have a project where so many things went wrong at the same time. So yeah, it all worked out in the end. And that's actually what I ended up winning the award for.
So you won the award for that?
Yeah, so you had to, it was my mentor nominated me for it. I didn't know it was up. You had to, for new property investor of the year, you had to put in your first ever deal. And so technically that was, I'd done three within a couple of weeks, but that was technically the first one. So I wrote absolutely everything that went wrong, everything that went right. But that's also more of an all-rounded award. So it's judged on your first deal, but then also what you've done within the first 12 months of property. Mm-hmm. So there was other things that had gone on as well.
So for anyone that's starting in property, if that's not enough to put you off. No, we don't aim to put you off. But if you think it's easy.
Oh, it's so not.
It's not.
No.
I've said it so many times, obviously a lot of the people that come onto the podcast do invest. Or have invested for a very long time, but they don't just talk about the good side. They always talk about the shit side of it, me included, and I've lost money. Mm. And it's very important for people to know the truth. Mm. But yeah, I mean, what would you say to anyone that's starting out or wanting to start in property, especially the times we find ourselves in?
Seek a coach, seek a mentor, go slow, start with one project. If you can do it with somebody, even better. I have a habit of wanting to do everything on my own. It's definitely not a positive trait at all. And I think that's just stemmed from me being out in the world from 21, finding my own, you know, my own career, my own job, living alone, different contracts all the time. I think I've got a bit of a hyper independence.
Do you ever find that lonely?
Yeah. And that's not to say I am lonely, because I'm not. I've got amazing friends and a great family, but my family are in Liverpool.
Yeah.
My friends have their own lives going on. I'm currently single. So yeah, there's definitely lonely times, but I'm bringing people into my team now and working with some really good people in the industry. So
the reason I ask that is because I'm the same.
Mm.
I'm very much the same. I'd like to do stuff on my own. I'm very good at outsourcing, but then when you're on your own, you're thinking, shit, I've got like £1 million worth of debt on my head, and I'm going, there's only so much I can outsource, but I can't outsource that.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, when this tanks, if it does tank, no, I can't think like that.
Yeah.
But and then you think, no, tomorrow will be a fight.
Yeah.
It's another day. All right, let's move on. Let's crack on.
Yeah.
So, and again, for anyone listening, you will have days like that.
Mm.
100% you will, but you just have to take each day as it comes. That's why I asked that question. Do you ever feel lonely?
Yeah, the inner chatter in your brain is wild, right? Just on a day-to-day basis.
Mm.
Of course I feel lonely, but I think that's very normal of being an entrepreneur, if you want to call it, or a business owner. Yeah. You are doing it on your own, essentially, at the beginning, anyway. Yeah.
And what I'll touch back on that loneliness. What was your relationships like, your personal relationships?
I've had some amazing relationships. I was with somebody for 5 years, then very quickly met somebody else who I was with for 6 years. So I've always been like a more, less relationships, more intimate in terms of personal friendships, family, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But then when my last long relationship, when that broke up, that was kind of my first period of like real heartache and depression and mental health, I'd say. That was when that was my first experience of that. I was about 27. So it was 6 years ago now. It's a long time, almost 6 years ago. And I've been in relationships since, two relationships since, but not as long, for like almost a year.
So when you were 27, that was probably the worst time of your life.
Yeah.
And you had projects on the go then?
One of the worst times.
One of.
Yeah. I had been angel investing at that point.
Yeah.
So no, I didn't have projects, but I had my own dance entertainment agency.
So you was traveling and you had a lot on. So you, from doing my own DD, you was Dubai. Yeah, so you was Dubai, Egypt, pretty much traveling the whole of Asia.
Mm.
Why was it the hardest time?
Because I'd had this, like, we'd bought a house together. We were viewing wedding venues. It was very much like we had this plan. We were having kids, you know, all the rest of it. And then when that all went, it was like, shit, what do I do now? I'm on my own.
Mm.
Like, what does Lizzie want just as an individual? So I think that's the main thing. It's like, I think if you're super set on something and then that goes, it's a little bit of your identity's gone.
Yeah, no, I agree with it. Do you think you find it hard to trust now?
Yeah. Again, though, I'm a lot better now. It was 6 years ago. At first, it was awful, yeah.
Mm.
It took me about 2 years before I could properly, like, open up and let somebody in again. But I think I also really needed that time alone.
Yeah.
I had a ball. I lived in Dubai for just over a year, as you said before, and I did that after we'd broken up, because we were supposed to go, like, two or three times together, and he didn't want to each time, so I was kind of holding my career back for his.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a great time. That was one of the best contracts ever. Don't love Dubai as a place, probably would never go back, but had a great time.
Who do you trust?
My family, my best friends. I have like three very, very close friends, and I trust myself.
What a great answer that is.
Mm.
Yeah. No one's ever said that they trust themselves.
No.
No.
Yeah, no, I do. I trust myself because your gut never lies. And I think whether you make a decision and it's the wrong decision in that moment, it's still the right decision for you in the long term, I believe, anyway.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And you have to take responsibility. You're responsible for that.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
as long as you know that, then you can obviously deal with it later on down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, moving on to today, you're presenting on quite a lot of shows, aren't you? So, talk to me about that.
Yeah, I do a lot on social media mainly. We just finished filming series 6 of Property Elevator, which is on Property TV, and then they're shown on Sky. And that's always really good fun. Mm-hmm. And I started out in entertainment, so I was doing more like red carpet work and like live interviewing. I'd like to dabble back into that, but home and lifestyle is kind of where I see the career moving forwards and traveling, because I am away a lot. That's a big love of mine, whether it's just for a job or whether it's just a holiday. But corporate, I have a lot of corporate clients and a lot of website work, a lot of social media. I do a lot with a channel called Property London, who have a large like YouTube base and broad social media. I think that's where the future is and where the work is, really.
And that's all over social media?
Social media, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but working on other people's channels, I don't really have any interest in making my own.
Why?
It's too intrusive for me.
Right.
It's just, I've seen people who've done it, and yes, the money is incredible, but for me to just show every part of my life, it's not for me.
Yeah, so I'm in agreement with you there, because there's just, you have to put so much time, money and effort in.
Yeah.
And I know I'm going to get slammed for this by a certain individual. But if you enjoy what you do and you can make money doing it and travel the world like you already do, then why would you not? I'll say his name. Aaron will absolutely kill me for saying it, but he loves TikTok. He's absolutely rinsing it. He's doing a fantastic job on it.
Yeah, he is.
But would I do what he's doing? Probably not, because it's not me.
Yeah.
You look at him and he's doing amazing things on there. It's just not my vibe. And I know that you can make some serious money on there, some serious money, but it's just, I don't, unless I see, I know money talks, but I don't know enough about that yet. But again, traveling the world, if you're already getting paid to do it, then why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm definitely introducing TikTok into what I'm doing. Aaron gave me some really good tips, actually, a few months back when I saw him at his event. But yeah, he's using some really good ways of gaining traction in terms of what's the word? It's very like black or white, and I personally don't like that way of working what I do, because I see the world in a million different colours, and I don't believe that there's one thing for one person and one thing for another person. Like, should you start a business or should you go to uni? But they're conversation starters, and I can totally see why people do it. But yeah, it's each to their own. I think as long as you believe in what you're doing and you're genuinely happy and you're not doing it as at a detriment to the people around you and to other people, then go for it.
Yeah, and I think the only danger I see or foresee with people starting out on it is that it's a quick fix, and people are very quick to change what they do nowadays. You've got Amazon, you've got so many different products and people can make money from, or say they can make money from, but they're very quick to change how they can potentially make money. I'm going to start property. I'm going to do rent to rent. I'm going to go and, like I say, sell products on Amazon.
Yeah.
If you stick to something for 12 months, you can actually make a living from it.
Yeah.
I don't know what your thoughts are on that, especially with today's generation.
Yeah, I think that's one of the downfalls of social media, because you see everybody else doing everything. It's like information overload. So you do see Amazon, you see e-commerce, you see rent to rent, you see property, you see stocks, shares, crypto, and it's like, whoa, which one do I do? And it's like, shall I try them all? I had total shiny penny syndrome when I first started in property, but that was because I had no idea what or how to do it. So I did kind of test the water with a few different things until I figured out what I liked. So I think it's good in that sense that you can trial and error some stuff, but the main important takeaway from my learnings has been you cannot just do something for the monetary perspective of it, because it doesn't work. I'm not motivated just by money. I have to genuinely enjoy what I'm doing and find value in it, and also find value in it for other people. Because if I'm just doing something for money, I fail badly.
And you get bored.
Yeah, and you get bored, and you're not being true to yourself either.
Yeah.
Like you're not going deep enough inside and actually thinking, okay, what do I want out of life? Like, who am I? What do I enjoy? What brings me happiness? What brings me joy in life? It can't just be all about this toxic hustle lifestyle of money, money, money. I find it boring.
So what does bring you happiness?
Oh, not money. Money is the tool to give you time to do the things that you love. So, of course, you have to earn money. You know, I'm not saying don't focus on money at all. But I'm like a big outdoors girl, love hiking, love my holidays, but I love like adventure holidays. I'm not like an all-inclusive 2 weeks on the beach type of person. I love animals, obsessed with dogs,
alpacas,
pygmy goats, cats. Yeah, you've done your research. So I'd love like a little mini farm.
Mm-hmm.
Love to
live,
yeah. Not yet, because at the moment I live in central London.
Yeah, that's not going to happen there, is it?
Yeah, but again, that's another thing that's coming to an end for me. I'm figuring out now kind of what the next step is for me and where I want to live and where I want to go. Because I do want to work towards living the life that I actually really want to live. And living in central London isn't that.
No.
As much as I've loved it and it's brought me to some incredible opportunities. So, yeah.
I was going to ask, describe your dream life, but you kind of have then.
That's
you've
it.
Done it already.
Dream life would definitely be in the sun. Yeah. I don't know if the UK is for me full time, forever. In the sun, outdoorsy, bring my kids up in the sunshine, the beach, animals, nature.
Mm-hmm.
Nice dinner. I'm a bit of a foodie, but I love cooking as well.
Yeah.
Having friends round, love hosting. Yeah.
So Liverpool's off the cards as
Yeah. Although I'm just in the middle of doing an Airbnb, which is in Liverpool, so that I will then have a base that I can go stay when I'm at home and can host the family and things, but then I can come away.
Good. So we always end the podcast with this question. Elizabeth, how are you doing?
I am doing good. I am in a very transitional period of my life at the moment. So there's lots of big changes and lots of big questions that are going around in my head, which is scary. So sometimes I can be... what's the word? Sometimes I can be scared of what's going on and what's going to be going on in the next year, but change is needed for me right now and change is good.
What are you scared of?
Making big decisions on my own probably is the biggest one for me. And because they are big decisions, it's like, ooh, well, are they the right decisions or are they not? But I'd rather make them than stay in the same position.
How do you get over making that decision on your own and making it with someone else?
I think maybe if you've got the support of somebody else and you've got the opinion of somebody else, you can work with that. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're on your own, there's so many options.
Yeah.
Almost too many.
There is. That is 100% true.
Mm.
Mm. So what are you doing in the next 5 years?
In the next 5 years, I'm going to find where I want to plant my roots a bit more, get them firmly planted into the ground.
Yeah.
I'm going to continue my presenting career, continue the property portfolio. I want to keep that probably more to the north, just so that I've got the family there, because I won't be here. Mm-hmm. I don't see myself in the UK. Hopefully have a family and live a life that makes me really happy.
Perfect. Elizabeth, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It was brilliant.
It's been great.
Thank you.